Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Benson, that's Paul Schultz, and nothing you're about to hear is true. No, I'm listening to the music.
Oh, okay, all right, we'll let it play for a second.
Oh, okay.
Good choice this week, man. We got a great one today, folks. We're going to talk to Andy Wright, A. William Wright, on Twitter, in the Twitterverse, in the Instagramverse, and Facebook, and everywhere. He's going to talk to us. He's finished Act 1 of the audiobook podcast, The New Aleph on the Worlds of Maybar. And he's going to give us kind of a recap. I'm going to ask him a few questions. We'll kind of get a little bit into what we can expect from Act 2. And just, you know, all sorts of conversing with a friend of the show. And then Paul and I are going to talk about Stranger Things. And then if we have time, we may or may not have time. If we do have time, because, you know, we can ramble with the best of them. Lord knows I'm a rambling man.
That's right. You were born a rambling man.
I was born a rambling man. I can't be tied down to one place for very long. I'm just drifting through town, you know. That's right. If we do have time, we'll do a little T&D toward the end. If we don't have time, we promise we'll get back to it next week.
Yeah.
Without further ado, I don't even know that there's been any ado. But if there has been ado, there's not going to be any more. Because welcome to the show, Andy Wright. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so pleased to have you with us. We enjoy your audiobook. We enjoy you. I enjoy your Facebook posts.
Yes.
Oh, thanks.
Now I know how to write a TV pilot because of his posts.
It's true.
Yeah, for those of you that aren't Facebook friends with Andy, he said that it is funny because I've done that too, where I'm like, ooh, I have this great idea, but nowhere near enough time to do anything with it. Well, Andy came up with a solution.
Well, solution, quotation marks.
Just write a treatment for a TV pilot.
That's what I'm going to do with the Valiant 4 because I can never finish that goddamn book. So that's a TV pilot.
See, those ideas come to Andy because he lives in L.A. He lives out there with the Hollywood elite.
That's right.
All the crazies.
All right, Andy. So, Worlds of Maybar. Why don't we start out? How about you explain the difference or the relationship between what you call the Worlds of Maybar and the New Aleph?
Well, the Worlds of Maybar is the overall story. The New Aleph is book one. Which is done and written. I'm just recording and then releasing the chapters every other week. And I am working on writing the second book as well, which I'm about a third of the way through-ish, which is hard because I'm spending so much time recording and editing the podcast. But
I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So theoretically, you know, fast forward 5-10 years, there's a whole series of books called the Worlds of Maybar, and there's the New Aleph is the one that started it all, and then there's like 17 more within the Worlds of Maybar, right? Or however many.
Hopefully
more.
Not that many. That'd be crazy.
So it's like Star Wars. The Worlds of Maybar is like Star Wars, and the New Aleph is like A New Hope, right?
Yeah.
So at some point in the future, you're going to do 3 prequels that really suck, and then you'll hire J.J. Abrams to do... Is it J.J. Abrams or that other guy? I forget.
Yeah, it was Abrams.
Abrams.
Is he doing the other ones?
Yeah,
now?
Abrams.
The new... Abrams, he's doing the new ones.
He did Save Him. He did 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. He might do 9.
So you'll at some point have J.J. Abrams come back and try to save the franchise or introduce the franchise to a new generation. You mentioned something interesting about your process. So the book's written, and you're going back and you're reading it. Do you have any examples of things you've changed, like from when you wrote the novel to now that you're reading it as an audiobook?
Yeah, there's a lot of little changes that happen where I'm reading it and I'm like, there's some chapters where I'm like, did I revise this? What happened? And because like most of the way it's kind of smooth. I spent like a year revising it almost, or like 6 months ish. I don't know. But then I get to these chapters where it's just a mess and I'm like, oh, and I have to go back and clean it up. But other times, there was one time I had to completely dump a scene and rewrite this whole scene because I didn't like it just didn't feel right. But the biggest changes that have happened multiple times is changing the order of scenes. Mm. And that was to fit the format of the podcast, because it's like, I want to end each podcast on a good punchy cliffhanger or just like end with on a button. But sometimes the chapters don't end that way because it's kind of just, because it's the pacing of like, oh, you could just turn the page, but people can't just turn the page. So I want to have a little bit more satisfying closure at each thing. So I'll sometimes shuffle the scenes around.
You have an example of that from Act One?
I'd have to think. There was a time when I think when we have the reveal, and oh, for anybody who's listening, this will definitely be loaded with spoilers. when Soma finds out about her family, originally that chapter didn't end right after the reveal. Mm-hmm. It ended with something else, like some other scene where somebody's like, oh, I'm just going off and going getting groceries or something. I don't know. And it was like, well, I can't end that. I can't like have this dramatic reveal and then like have this other little boring, not so much boring, but like much less dramatic scene after it, and then end with that. So I like had to, I shove the other scene ahead of it and had to do some tricks to make it work. But yeah.
We talked about this being a sort of a recap. So could you tell us anything that we're supposed to know, or tell us what we're supposed to know already about the nature of the time, like where are we in time and space? Where are the characters, I guess? Up to this point, what is the reader supposed to think or know or feel?
Up to this point, we've seen that there's the two main worlds, Pan and Prometheus. Most of the characters right now are on Pan doing stuff. Soma, Aramis, and Paul are there. Nathan is on Prometheus still. And those two worlds are, the reader knows that on each world, they consider the other world to be like the land of the dead, because they figure there's this whole system of the idea of the Pravids, that if people have a hard life, they'll get to come back on the other world. But you don't see them very much on Prometheus. They're there, but they're like, they stay away from society. Where on Pan, they're very visible and kind of more integrated.
And the people on Prometheus know about Pan?
They only know of it as kind of like it's the afterlife. On Pan, because the Pravids are integrated in society more, they know that Prometheus is like a real world where normal people live lives. But Prometheus, they don't know that about Pan, because the Pravids aren't integrated into culture, so it's all turned into myth.
So is a Pravid like kind of a spirit sort of thing, or an angel, or?
They're people that have abilities. They're all kind of, they're associated with different elements like water, wind, fire, earth, and that's all has to do with like what kind of suffering they went through in life. Mm. It's like it compensates for whatever they went through, kind of.
They got mad skills based on, so it sort of borrows from some of the earth mythology, right? I mean, Seems like it anyway. Like, based on how you lived your life this time around, when you're reincarnated, you have a certain other kind of life. Does that make sense? Or what was the inspiration for that concept?
The inspiration was largely from the idea of kind of like, what if suddenly people who like people who are driven by compassion, or like people who are kind of like have good intentions driven by compassion for people who had hard lives, what if they suddenly had absolute power? What if they had control over reality? What might they do? And it was kind of just that's kind of part of where the idea came from. It's kind of it wasn't quite that linear. It was kind of more of a back and forth about building this idea of these people with powers that were, there wasn't very many of them. And then there's the whole issue of the bond, which will be explained better later on in the story. It's only been like vaguely referenced so far.
What bond is that?
I don't want to say too much, but it has to do with a special relationship between a Pravid and a normal person, or a human.
So you mentioned special powers, power over reality. Mm-hmm. I did happen to listen, by the way, to the interlude, and that was revealing, to say the least.
I've had a feeling it might raise more questions than it answered, but I figured that'd be okay.
No, that's great. That's great. It's one of those things that makes you want to hear the next half.
Yeah. Yeah. Just remember, when you answer all the questions, you end up with the Star Wars prequels. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But you said power over reality. What is reality here? Mm-hmm. At least as far as the listener knows, is this? Are these real worlds? Are we living in the Matrix? Virtual worlds? What's going on here?
So the reader doesn't know yet. Okay. the actual story. Now, the thing that I had trouble deciding on was about how Nathan thinks he knows what the world's construction is, what the universe, multiverse is, how it's put together. And of course, we've kind of been following him in his journey to figure out why things don't seem to be the way that he thought they were before, since he helped, you know, build it.
Not to interrupt, but...
Oh.
Actually, to interrupt. So Nathan Sanchez is the guy that this super power thing named... what's her name? His name?
Miniature Golf.
Miniature Golf. Brought him back to life, or not back to life, but woke him up out of this cryostasis, right?
Yeah, basically.
What's that thing's name?
Percy.
Percy. That's right. Percy. Mercy, Percy. Right. So Nathan Sanchez brought back to life by Percy. I'm still not exactly sure what or who Percy is, but some kind of magical, has a lot of powers to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Go on. So Nathan isn't quite sure what's going on, even though he was involved with building it, right?
Yeah. And so I've kind of felt like I haven't been sure if I've been like playing a fair game with, I haven't let the reader quite know what Nathan thinks. And I've been careful about having, when he has conversations with the people about, or even when he's thinking about it, so that he doesn't quite reveal everything. But it might be unnecessary, the dodging, even though it's going to come up soon, the answer. To what he knows, but it's more complicated than what he thinks, which I mean is obvious since he's been trying to figure out what's going on. But
so you've alluded to like stuff we're gonna find out. What can you tell us about Act Two that, without spoiling it for people, what can we expect from Act Two?
Well, Act Two, Soma is. So far, Soma, like basically all of the new Aleph is about her, it's about her journey. She has the most agency in it, which I guess has kind of been what's happened so far also. But it doesn't mean everybody's just going to be on the sidelines doing nothing. That's going to, that's not going to be the case for the whole rest of the story.
So story, you know, we, Paul and I have talked a lot about story, and I think we've had some Facebook conversations as well. Like what makes for story, and, you know, the classic, like, storytelling 101 says, like, a story is, you know, you got a character who wants something, and then crap gets in the way of them getting that thing, and the whole story is about them overcoming the obstacles and getting that thing they want. Is that what, is that how you see it? Do you, are there other elements? You seem to have a you seem to place a lot of importance on mystery and like keeping things from the reader, assuming, I guess, presumptively, because you're hoping they really want to find out those things.
That's the dream.
And so they keep reading, right? Is that is that accurate? Or
I mean, it's kind of this, it's almost like, I guess in the back of my head, I think about like, how much ammunition do I have to keep the reader engaged and keep it. It's like, you want to like give a little bit of information. It's almost like leaving breadcrumbs for them, or like leaving the Reese's pieces for E.T. to trap him, I guess. But so I got to figure out how much ammo do I have? Do I have good mystery? Do I have, are the characters making good decisions that readers will relate to and be like, oh, I would, that's how I would react. Or, oh, that's not how I would react. or like, what's wrong with this person? You know? So it's like, I guess that's kind of part of it. I don't want to rely too much on the mystery of the world, though. I've seen that go bad. Like, I, in my opinion, that's what kind of happened with the Dune series. I read the first Dune book, and it was fantastic. But in the second book, like, he'd already revealed the world, and the world was so fascinating and so amazing to, like, see the rich culture and characters. But in the second book, he just, like, oh, let's deal with these intergalactic politics, and it's like, ugh,
you're getting paid. Getting paid a nickel a word, so you're gonna stretch that out as much as you can.
Yeah. So I don't want to fall into that trap. For one thing, like, oh, now I'm gonna try and So I have to like try to keep a steady momentum of not relying on mystery too much, but keeping it still fun, the mystery fun, and the world is pretty deep. There's a lot of things to do, so I'm not worried about that, about running out of neat stuff to for the characters to do.
Well, that sounds pretty awesome. So we're going to find out more about Soma in the next, in the Act Two, and maybe...
Well, she'll be doing stuff, yeah.
Spoiler alert, Nathan will be trying to kick some ass, I imagine. Maybe he'll get some help from a Pravid or something.
Maybe.
Yeah, we can always hope.
So I guess I should address some questions.
Yeah.
I had so many people send in questions, guys. It was just a...
Well, then why don't you narrow it down to just a few?
Oh, man. I'll just pick a couple. The best. There's going to be a lot of people out there disappointed that I didn't get to their question, but, you know, just try next time, everybody.
Show up to the book signing.
That's right.
So my friend Megan asked... Are there afterlife animals? And now on both worlds, there are the same amount of like wild of these magical beasts. They're very rare, and their body part, just like there's a bunch of there's this whole art of building things and building making potions out of these magical items. So there's like, This is a world with everything that's in our world, but there's also some magical minerals and plants and animals. And so if you can capture catch these animals, you can use parts of their bodies in parts of these machines and potions and stuff. And they're on both worlds, but in Pan, all that stuff is cultivated. It's part of regular society. Like the minerals are mined, the plants are cultivated, the animals are domesticated as much as possible. Some are undomesticatable. So they're too dangerous usually to be raised in captivity. So
which, like a honey badger.
which, you know, which drives the drives the price of their byproducts up through the roof. So
yeah.
One other important question was about the issue of the way, like, why is there seem to be like racism towards the Pravids in Pan? Like, why? Because there's that scene where Aramis gets harassed by some jerk who doesn't treat her very nicely.
Was he deplorable?
He was quite deplorable.
Ever since Trump was elected president of Pan, you know, everybody's racist now.
You know. Of course. That's what triggered Pravids, all the racism.
See, the Pravids, they're only sending us the rapist Pravids and the criminal Pravids.
Wow. You know, for a minute there, I thought we were doing Rough Draft.
Sorry.
And then Steve comes in with this Trump impression. And now that's the show we're doing.
Well, you know. But yeah, so there, it's a just a complicated cultural situation where a lot of people would argue whether or not the Pravids do more harm than good, the existence of them. Because they're the other, they're stronger, they have powers, they're more beautiful or whatever, or more attractive. And
like black people in our world.
But so they're just not, they're looked down on as that they have life easy, that they just take life easy, they have everything handed to them. So there's like a lot of different levels of like society having resentment towards them. And often, and as a case with some stereotypes, there's a lot of people, there are a lot of Pravids who propagate the stereotypes. And we've also, I also want to make sure to address that we get to see a lot of Pravid culture and impressions of Pravid culture through Aramis's eyes. And she's very biased, and things aren't as black and white as she sees them. So that's always good to remember. So like she says some stuff about, she's very cynical of the Pravids themselves and their culture.
Sounds like being a Pravid would be pretty awesome though. Cause you got white privilege combined with looking like the hotness of a black person and the athletic ability of a black person. And but you do have the society resenting them like Jews. So yeah.
they don't have very much money though. That's they don't tend to bother with getting high paying jobs or anything. So that's one thing that's,
I guess,
that's a stereotype anyway. The stereotype of them would be that.
Would be that they're hard workers, but they don't have a lot of money. Are they very religious?
No.
Okay.
They're not.
I know where this is
going. They're not no, they're not religious because they because they work. They commute. They often are interacting with proxies for the Alephs. So everything is too normalized for them to be that religious. Because the Alephs are people that actually were raised from the dead. So it's like, oh, well, it's all, instead of, it's the spiritualness of the afterlife is kind of been fizzled out, which is kind of what a little bit of the journey that Paul is going on. Where like his ideas of resurrection and like life after death have all kind of just been shaken by having administrators in some ethereal office somewhere deciding that in his case it's a little different. But
speaking of Paul, I've been doing all the talking. Paul, do you have any questions?
Well, I was going to make a comment about being raised from the dead first, but raised, it has to, okay, we've all had those accidental naps where like we don't realize we fell asleep, and then we wake up, we're so startled, we don't even know how the world works. I imagine that's what, you're like, who am I? You're like Sam Beckett from Quantum Leap. You're like, I imagine that's what being raised from the dead feels like. Because, you know, one minute there's like a train coming at you, the next minute you're like laying on a hospital bed, like wide awake. Yeah. But I had a serious question, and then I had something else I was gonna do, but I have a rough draft question for you. Because you were talking about editing your chapters to fit the podcasts early on. And I was curious if editing for the podcast has affected your writing any.
Oh. Yeah, it has. I've noticed how many times I wrote down so-and-so shrugged. It's like, oh my gosh. I keep...
We shrug a lot.
But it's like, I didn't notice it until I started saying it over and over again. It's almost like, I should rename this book Aramis Shrugged. That should be the name of the book. Because that phrase happens way too many times. So I've had to go.
I'll get a picture of my daughter like this, and then like the Atlas Shrugged, and then we'll just get you set for the cover.
Holding up.
Yeah.
She'll be holding up Pan. Yes.
yeah, pretty much. So that stuff definitely am I gonna have to change the way I write from now on to better fit a radio format? Like, I don't know. There's a lot of things where it's like, if I knew I was going to be reading this, I would have written it differently. But I don't, but it doesn't mean the way it's written is bad.
Right.
It's just kind of like, it's like logistically, it would have been better to do it. And I almost hope it doesn't like hurt my style. I don't know. Like, it'll probably change my style.
I don't think it will. Yeah. It'll probably change it and like make you more aware of, you know, what you're doing, because I mean, like I said before, I used to belong to a writer's club, and even doing the stuff for the Halloween special and for Rough Draft, you, as you're reading it out loud, you become and reading it to an audience, whether the audience is there or not, you become keenly aware of like glaring repetition and things like that. And I think that can only help you in the long run.
Well, the stuff I'm more worried about is like on the page, there's things you can do that will work perfectly, where you can have like, you can do tricks to make it so that you don't have a lot of speech tags, where you just have like maybe like three or four lines where it's just dialogue, just back and forth. Like, you want to pick up the pace of the dialogue. You don't, and it's clear who's talking. That,
yes.
Yeah.
I love doing that. Yeah. I hate putting he said, she said when it's just two people talking.
But when I'm doing the recording, I sometimes get insecure where it's like, are people going to know? Are my voices I'm doing distinct enough that people are going to be able to keep track? Like, things like that where I'm not like completely sure, like that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff I'm hoping that I don't stop doing just because of the podcast. Like, I need to, you know, not stop doing the good writing things just because they make the podcast harder.
Right, right. Well, I think you'll find a happy medium after you've been doing it long enough, I think.
Have you ever met, a happy medium?
I'm a happy large. I mean.
Because they know how it turns out, and it ain't good.
So,
poor guys.
Or do they really? Do they really know how it turns out?
I don't know.
All right. So my follow up is: Have you ever, Andy, watched Inside the Actor's Studio with the overly pretentious James Lipton?
No, I've actually only watched the Will Ferrell impression of it.
Okay. SNL. Well, then you know about his like extremely like pretentious, loaded final 10 questions that he asks his hosts on his guests on the show.
I've heard of
well,
it. Yeah.
Normally they're 10. Well, there's 10 questions. Well, for the sake of succinctness, I've narrowed it down to like how George Carlin narrowed the 10 commandments down to like one. I've narrowed the 10 questions down to three questions. So I'll ask you these three questions, and then
answer me these questions three, and the other side you see.
And true to James Lipton, I have cards. All right, question number one: What is your favorite word?
Blue. No, yellow. Ah! Sorry.
I'm going to just go with weird. I can't think of anything fancy right now.
You use weird a lot.
I do.
That's fine.
I've been picked on for it, but
it's weird.
It's okay.
Well, not on this show. We'll pick on you for other reasons. Okay. Question number two. What is your favorite curse word?
Oh, I'm no good at swear words. I don't know.
Well, the beauty of it is you could say anything, and I could just put in a bleep.
Say fire truck.
Oh. No, I'm just like, I guess I could just go with damn it. I don't know. It's not very fancy, but.
Yeah, but if it doesn't have to be fancy, but if it works, it works. All right, and now for the final one.
Okay.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you walk through the pearly gates?
Well, there's what I hope he says, and there's what I expect him to say. I expect him to say, I know you have questions, but just calm down. That's... So... So I guess that's... I'll just have that be my answer.
Well, that's nice. Good enough.
Well, this has been a pleasure. It's been an honor. Looking forward to hearing Act 2. Why don't you tell everybody where to go to find your audiobook podcast?
You can either search for Worlds of Mabar, that's M-E-B-A-R, on iTunes, or do worldsofmabar.com. And the best way to follow me is Instagram. That's where I'm posting the most stuff is there, which is just at the A. William Wright, which will get you almost anywhere, will get you to me if you stick with that.
Right on, man. I do recommend it. Everybody needs to go out and binge listen so you can be caught up so we can do spoilers next time we talk.
It's very bingeable. Very, very bingeable. They're not very long episodes. So.
Very accessible. And you get to hear Andy's sweet voice. Okay. Well, thank you. Go get some rest. You know, you've been working hard. And
I actually have to start recording episode 10 right after this, so I don't get to rest quite yet.
Oh, hey, look at that. We accidentally tied it all in. That's great.
That's what they used to say about me in prison. Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show. That was a sweet conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to talk a little bit about Stranger Things. Spoilers are bound to happen.
Your brother better hurry up and get on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I hope he's caught up by now. That was kind of an interesting exchange because I had never thought of it that way before. My brother is now an avid listener to the show, which is awesome. He was probably our first listener back in the day when we used to have our show on the bus on the way to school.
Whether he wanted to be or not.
Yeah. But if you think about, like, put it in the Stranger Things context, he was kind of the, he wasn't Steve, you know, because Steve is like big man on campus. My brother was athletic. He was a jock and a shop guy and all that stuff. But he wasn't, wasn't mean, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't get us. So which character in Stranger Things doesn't really get the kids, but they're not necessarily bullies? I don't know who that would be. I don't know if there is any of those. But yeah, who knew? So he, who knew that in 2017 that we'd be ruling the world now?
That's right.
You know, it's not just Stranger Things. It's everything. Like D&D is popular, gaming. Mm-hmm. You know what it is, and I think maybe we could predict what the next thing will be. Because if you think about it, like the jocks, for the longest time, the jocks were popular, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what you needed to make a good living. You needed a strong back and quick reflexes, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you could work in the mines or at the factory or, you know, whatever. So of course they were popular. But us nerds were like paying attention to, you know, the more cerebral arts.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that are required now to be successful, right? Mm-hmm. The patron saint of geeks is, you know, one of the richest guys in the world because, his skills are useful. So if you look at, like, now, who are the kids in school that 20 years from now will be ruling the world instead of... Because I don't think it'll be the geeks anymore. I think... The geeks are going to turn into the worker bees eventually.
Yeah, you know? That then, you know, what'll happen then is the strong one, the physically strong ones will once again dominate and make the worker bees. You know, they'll get a crossbreed. They'll get a strong thinker, and he'll be like their spearman who will basically spearhead the whole movement, and then all the jocks will take over again.
I don't see the jocks making a comeback cuz I don't think brawn is going to be useful except for, entertainment, sports and stuff, you know. And the guys running the sports teams will still be the brains of the operation. Speaking of the brains, all right, let's get into it a little bit.
Yeah, okay. All right. We're getting off. We're digressing.
We're digressing. First of all, my first reaction to Stranger Things, and I watched it with my wife, and she had the same, like, the reason we fell in love with it almost immediately is it is the most authentic 80s program I've ever seen.
Yes.
That includes movies made in the 80s.
Yeah. Yes. And it even surpasses. I'm a big fan of the show, the comedy show The Goldbergs, which takes place in the 80s. It's close, but it's not nearly as close as Stranger Things is for basically making you feel like you're watching an 80s. I expect lines to come up on the screen periodically like you're watching a videotape. It's so 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When it's dark on the screen, you see the little speckles of the, from the celluloid of the film or whatever, the acetate.
Well, they had said that for season two, I guess there was a way you could adjust your television to make it look more 80s. But I'm like, I wasn't going to do that because I'd forget how to reset them. So I didn't do
well that. I mean, if you watch a movie, even a movie made in the 80s, but movies about the 80s, they're an idealized version of the 80s. They're all the kids have perfect skin, their hair is, it looks like they were in the salon for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Great makeup, everybody's clothes are like ultra stylish for the period. And the only people whose clothes and hair and skin aren't perfect are the ones, they're the bit characters who are the ones that the perfect people make fun of in the movie, right?
Right.
This one was like, you know, I'm looking at Steve, the popular kid, and I'm going, his skin's not great. He's got this hair thing going, but it's not perfect.
Yep. Yep.
It's the version of perfect that would have existed in the 80s, right?
Yep.
The other crazy thing is these kids are our age.
Yeah.
Like before we became our dad's age. But and they're going through the same kinds of things that we went through.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, like being picked on the playground or whatever by the jocks, you know, and or the bullies. Not so much the jocks. I don't want to diss the jocks anymore, but the bullies that are picking on them on the playground and I don't know where to begin. So, because I was just thinking of one of the most typically teenage moments, because you and I have talked on this show a lot about how middle school or junior high, as we had it, is the single most horrific, worst time of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Kids, by the time they hit junior high, are complete assholes. There's a big boiling raging bunch of assholes.
Yeah.
It was one of those selling moments for me when they're at the assembly talking about the kid, and you got that handful of little asshole kids making fun of him. Yeah. Like, God, that's just exactly how those people were. That's exactly how kids are at that age.
Oh, it's so true. So true. And, you know, I'm not going to just French kiss this movie the whole time. Because there are... One problem I do have is these kids, they have it a little bit too good, you know? We didn't have walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
We didn't
parents,
have...
Their parents were that. Rich.
Well,
well, except for Winona Ryder. She obviously wasn't.
But. Yeah, where did that kid get the money to get a walkie-talkie?
Yeah, because that thing would have cost him $12 in 1980-whatever. And that's a lot of money.
Well, and a bike that run that is put together and works.
Now, they did live in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So there's that. We did not. We had the good fortune of growing up in the sub.
We were country poor.
We were country as as Andy's favorite word.
We were country as damn it.
That's right.
So the thing that sold me on the authenticity was the pool party. Mm-hmm. What's her name? I can't remember her name. I know Barb, but what's the main character? What's her name?
Nancy.
Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. And Barb, you know, they go to this party, and I don't think you did either. We never went to these kind of things, right?
We were never invited to them.
So I think of it as like a rite of passage, almost like throughout history. You know, for millennia, men and women, they want to get together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that all men and women used to do this, right? The very attractive ones would pair up with each other, you know, and there would be this little dance that they do where the dude's trying to be cool, which Steve is trying to be cool. He's doing there's this great exchange where he's shotgunning the beer,
mm-hmm.
and she just looks at him. She's like, "Oh, you're just a cliche." And he goes, "Oh, I'm a cliche." He's like, "You're a cliche. You get the good grades. Yeah. You don't ever." And she's like,
"That was a John Hughes moment right there. That whole exchange was a John Hughes moment."
That's a great point. We were right. Don't you forget about me. And I was thinking, the Barb character was really well done.
Yeah, right? Barb is the most 80s character in the entire franchise. Yeah. I mean, she just
the glasses,
is.
The hair, yep. the shirt.
Yeah.
And Constance pointed this out, my wife pointed out that she's like, one of the great things is the style, like the wallpaper in the houses and the different styles in the houses, mm-hmm. People's clothes, people's hair and stuff. It's exactly like it was in the 80s, which is, it's not 80s style.
Right.
Like a lot of that stuff is from the 70s.
Right.
But in the 80s, that's what we were doing when we weren't caught up with, you know, the latest fashion. Right. Right?
Yep.
Which is perfect. I mean, these guys, let me say something. The Duffer Brothers, mm-hmm. okay? And at the beginning of every episode, it's like, you know, produced by the Duffer Brothers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're supposed to know who the Duffer Brothers are. Are we supposed to know who they are? It always makes me feel so uncool because I'm like, I don't know who the Duffer Brothers are. It's like, you know, this, what is it, John and Nathan Duffer? You know, if they said that, I'd be like, oh, okay. But no, it's like the Duffer Brothers. They're like, what are they, like the Coen Brothers? The the Cook Brothers or something all of a sudden? What's with that? Are they well known already? Or
well, they have done work in the past. They haven't. This was their first 100% them production. You know,
all right.
They've done stuff for other like the more like surreal television show type programming. They've done work with that, and then this just became their big breakout.
Gotcha. So anyway, they must be our age. They must have been in middle school.
I think they're a little bit younger than us, actually, which is, they just watched a lot of 80s movies.
I feel like it would have been cool. Well, I get, here's the thing. They were a little too nice to Barb, first of all. They're like encouraging her to have fun. It's like, oh, come on, Barb, you shotgun a beer. I kind of feel like in reality, it would have been more of like, although here's the good thing, Steve. One of the things I love about the whole series in season two, bringing in season two, is the characters actually change. Mm-hmm. Like they grow and they learn, and like Steve becomes a different person. He's not so different that he's not Steve anymore, but he's like a Steve who has learned a lot about himself and has matured and like has started thinking about other people, you know, mm-hmm. and has a different approach to life and everything. And maybe them being nice to Barb was sort of a foreshadowing of that, you know.
It could be.
Sort of he's not all bad. His friend is.
His friends, they could go fall off a cliff. But he's kind of in that in between, you know, stage.
Yeah. It makes sense, though, that this kind of thing would go on, because the women at that age, okay, 16 to 18 to 20-ish,
mm-hmm.
are like as fertile as they're ever going to be. And the eggs are fresh, and they're just, I mean, they're wide open. They're just spread out. They're like a porn star. Those eggs are spread out like waiting for a sperm, right? And men are at their physical powers, like they got no, like the ones who are in great shape, they got no guts. They can go all night. They can go seven times if they want to. And they're as fertile as they're ever going to be, right? So evolutionarily, it makes total sense. And it makes sense that the attractive ones would come together, right? Because I always used to think about how unfair it was. Like, why do attractive people have all the fun? And I thought, well, they don't. I had it all wrong, right? If there had been a dude there for Barb, like somebody, like let's say Barb is a four or a six, okay? If there had been a 4 to 6 dude, they would have been doing whatever, you know, the unattractive version or whatever, you know,
right.
the same thing. They right. would have been figuring out how to mate as well, right? Or figuring out how to avoid mating in our modern society. And so I was like, it makes total sense. And then I was thinking about how, you know, you and I, when I look at pictures of us from those days, I think, why didn't I realize I was just like a bottle of gel and maybe a new shirt away from being one of the attractive people, right? I mean, we had friends who, God bless them, there's nothing they could have done, right? They could have gone on Extreme Makeover, and those people would have been like, I'm sorry, we'll find you an opposite sex version of you, but there's no way you're going to be attractive, okay? But with you and me, I mean, we could have cleaned up. Mm. And then it was funny because I never did those things. I never went to the pool party. I never went to the regular parties. I never did any of that stuff. And then I left home, graduated from high school, went off to college, and then I did some of that. And I was like, is this what they were doing in high school? Oh, my God. Is this what I missed? Holy shit. And I was like, I got to do more of this. I gotta make up for lost time.
we've gone somewhere. I think we're a little bit off track here.
Well, no, this is emotionally what I was going through during this episode.
Oh, okay,
I was thinking that my development, my sexual development, was stunted because I didn't have any of these. You know, the parents aren't around.
Yeah.
We can behave like, you know, we can behave naturally like regular people.
We could not pull that off at all because, you know, your parents never went anywhere and neither right. did mine. And on the off chance my parents did go anywhere, there was like five other kids in the house. So,
well, the thing that shaped, you know, me, and I don't want to speak for you, but the types of things that shaped me were unhealthy experiences, like things that didn't really happen naturally.
Mm-hmm.
It was either the result of a predator type relationship, not me being the predator, but, you know, someone else who was farther along on the maturity scale, like taking advantage of my lack of judgment, or porn, you know, or something like that, which is totally unrealistic. Although if it weren't for porn, I would have had no idea what I was doing the first few times when I finally did, you know, break out and have my moment. It was like, I'll just do what I saw those dudes doing. You know?
It's educational. But, Let's just say that's the best.
I didn't get any complaints.
That's right. Which is also what they say about you in prison.
Except for the money parts, the money shots. Turns out they don't like it as much as they pretend to in the movie.
You know, porn lies to you about that.
Porn lied to me about everything except the very end. Then it's like, what are you doing?
I don't know. I've met a couple. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, man. So anyway, those were the emotions I was having during that scene. And that's what I said. I turned to Constance and I'm like, they captured that electric energy,
mm-hmm.
right? And then they referred back to it, of course, in season two, they refer back to it. They actually call it electricity, you know? And it is. It's like this... It's this buzzing. It's like this vibrating thing. And I remember being in college when I was finally out on my own and like having that a few times and just going, oh, my God, this is what life is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so there you go. But then, oh, man, I just feel like I'm rambling on. Oh, do you like the show?
No, it's okay. No. Dude. Let me put it this way. When the first season came out, I got a message from a friend who goes, Stranger Things. That's all she wrote. So I'm like, what does this even mean? So I looked for it. I found it on Netflix. And I don't binge watch anything. I just don't. I can't sit for like 8 hours at a time and do anything. Well, I ended up doing that for this because I got so caught up into it. By season four, I was hooked. By episode four, I was hooked on it. and I wanted to see how it played out. And I'm messaging her the whole time while this is on, you know, because there's just so much about it. Well, then my daughter comes home from school, and I'm like, you have to watch this with me. Now, she's at that age where she doesn't want to do anything with her dad because parents are square. So I made her sit down, and we started watching it again. Well, as they would say on SpongeBob, 8 hours later. So I watched it twice in one day. And then when season two debuted, I was sitting doing something. I don't know what the hell I was doing. And I was like, wait a minute. It's, because I think it was the 27th. I'm like, it's the 27th. Holy shit. So I got up and I ran, and my daughter's asleep, right? She's like, later. I ran in and jumped on the bed. I'm like, hello. She's like, what? It's the 27th. She's like, okay. She's like, gets up and realized. I saw like the thing in her eye just went, don't start it without me. So we sat down and basically binge watched it again. And for the fact that it gets she and I to sit down and do something together, that show is the best show ever because it rarely happens anymore. I absolutely love it. I don't think there's anything I can't. When season two came out, we started watching it. You know, the opening credits. And I looked over it, and I'm like, you know, this season could totally suck ass and we wouldn't care. It's just like, you're right. Because we were so stoked for it to be, you know, that it was finally out. So, yeah. No, it's fantastic.
Nice.
It's like, I don't know. It's just, it's the thing, it's the show we've been waiting our whole lives for, I guess. Because, like you said, there's so much of us and our generation of, you know, nerds or whatever we would have been called back then, dorks, nerds, geeks, whatever, that, you know, it speaks. And apparently it's not just us, because Netflix Stranger Things is the show that, like, Netflix is, like, making the most money on ever, you know? I mean, it's so, okay, you can only watch it on Netflix, but not everyone has Netflix, but somehow everyone has seen it. It's just that big.
Well, it's an interesting thing, and it'll be interesting into the future when Netflix and other streaming services first started, you know, providing their own original content. I thought, well, this will be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to hear how they measure the impact of a show like Stranger Things, because first of all, they know, like if you think about the old days of regular broadcast TV, mm-hmm. like they knew what their ratings were kind of, because they had Nielsen ratings or whatever. But everybody had access to that channel, right? Mm-hmm. So they'd use these Nielsen ratings to go to the advertisers and go, look, you should pay us more money because look how many people watch this thing, right? Whereas with like Stranger Things, they know exactly how many people watched it.
Yes. Yeah.
In fact, they know how many people watched each episode and how much of each episode and how many times they watched each episode. I mean, they have data coming out their wazoos, right? And they also can look at their subscriber numbers, like pre Stranger Things, post Stranger Things. And mm-hmm. when a new season comes out, do we get more subscribers? Do people unsubscribe and then resubscribe? So it's like a frontier, and Facebook's starting to pay for original content. Mike Rowe has a new show that's only available on Facebook.
Hmm.
It's like Facebook TV or something like that. And I don't know if you have to pay extra for it. I haven't looked into it, but it's really interesting because I think what that means for us is, you know, Netflix can do whatever they want, right? They can call up a studio and go, you know, or make us 5 episodes of that weird thing that you talked about, right? They don't have to worry about, well, we can only have so many shows and we only have so many time slots and we can't have a dud because we'd have people not watching during that time slot. No, you put it out there and nobody watches it. You can it and you chalk it up to we learn something.
Well, Netflix is going to be having a lot of free space here pretty soon because Disney is starting its own streaming network. So all of the Marvel TV shows that have been, like, what are the popular ones? Jessica Jones and Daredevil and now Punisher's coming out pretty soon. They're going to be going over to the Disney Channel, the Disney streaming network, leaving Netflix hanging high and dry. So they're going to have a whole lot of room for new stuff. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Well, the great thing is they have an infinite amount of room, right?
Right.
whether those things leave or don't leave or whatever.
Right.
Which also, it's interesting because they are now a content creator, content provider, as opposed to just a platform where you can go watch shows.
Right.
So if they want to have a superhero show, they can hire a studio to make a superhero show.
Well, I think they already have. Yeah. So I think they knew that was going to happen, and they made a deal with Mark Millar, who's the writer who created the... Have you seen the Kick-Ass movies? Not badass, Kick-Ass.
No.
Okay, well, he's a hugely popular comic book writer, and he recently started what he calls the Millarverse, and I guess that's something that they're going to be using to probably fill that void on Netflix from all the Marvel shows leaving them, so.
Well, I think we've managed to only talk about season one, so that... I think what that means is we can tell people that they can feel free to listen to this episode even if they're not caught up on season two.
Right.
In fact, we didn't really even give any spoilers away from season one.
No, not at all. Now that we've talked about the show a little bit and we've talked about our favorite like scenes or moments in the series, season one, who is your favorite character in season one?
Well, look. Anybody who I've ever talked to about the show says Hopper is their favorite character.
Because he is. Right?
So I could easily say Hopper's my favorite character.
Yeah.
I could easily say that. But I got to say, because it's Winona Ryder, and it's the first time in maybe ever that I've seen Winona Ryder play a character other than Winona Ryder. I got to say, the depth of... her character, the mother, is unbelievably good.
And
just the way my favorite thing about the mom, I forget her name. What's her name? Paula? No.
Joyce.
My favorite thing about her is she reacts not how a mother in a horror movie reacts to the monsters, but she reacts how a mother would react. In real life.
Yes.
You know? She's like, I am mother, hear me roar.
Yep.
But she's also like freaking out. But she's not, she doesn't turn into a little puddle of goo. Right?
Right.
She's okay, I know it looks crazy, but it's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing this because I got to save my boy. Yep. Right? And the true mark of a great actor for me, especially an actor who I got so used to playing the same character over and over.
Right.
Is I kept forgetting it was Winona Ryder.
Yes, you are exactly right. you forget that you're watching the girl from Heathers and Beetlejuice and Dracula and all that stuff. She's the mom. She plays the mom perfectly.
She's that kid's mom.
Mm-hmm.
She is acting. Now, I don't know how I know this because... to my knowledge, there's never been a real mom who's had to deal with supernatural monsters and stuff.
Mm.
But there have been plenty of moms who've had to deal with missing kids.
Yes.
And just she, to me, I just go, I know it's probably nothing like reality, but when I look at it, I go, yep, that's exactly how a mom would react.
Yeah.
With a missing kid who she knows isn't dead, and they're supernatural monsters.
Yes.
That's exactly
yeah.
how that would be. So, yeah, I'll have to say Joyce.
Yeah. Winona Ryder didn't even know what streaming meant when they when they approached her to do the part of Joyce. So,
yeah.
So, it's just, yeah, so, she's fantastic.
Who's your favorite?
Hopper.
Of course.
Well, like I've said before, the things he does in episode 4 and his reaction to them is exactly how when you've had enough and something has made you do terrible things, you're going to be pissed and you're going to want to get to the bottom of it. And that to me, because I was wishy-washy on him until that episode. That's what sold me on him. I think he's great.
And he's another character that grows and changes mm-hmm. and learns. And, you know, by the end of season 2, he's like a different version of himself, you know, a better version.
You know who the unsung heroes are of this whole series?
Hmm.
The deputies. Those guys are hysterical.
Yeah.
They're awesome. They reminded me of the two deputies on The Simpsons that are always talking with Chief Wiggums. But yeah.
Oh, those guys are good. But they're not deputies.
Well, whatever they are.
There's a moment in season 2 where somebody's like, they call him a, like, one, they say, "Deputy, can you blah blah blah?" And he's like, "I'm not a deputy."
Yeah. Because Hopper's not a chief, so he wouldn't be a...
I keep calling him the sheriff.
Yeah.
Like, whatever we're talking about, I call him the sheriff. There's a moment in season 2 where he's, like, trying to call in help.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, he's like, "I am the police. I need help." That's right. He is the police, isn't he? I get it. Well, I'll tell you what, man. I would love to hear from our listeners about who their favorite character is, as long as it's not Hopper. And if it is Hopper, I'm going to need you to you know, expound a little bit like Paul did. You know, don't just say Hopper because he's cool, you know?
Yeah.
Feel free to say one of the kids. I mean, they're supposed to be the main deal here, right? So feel free to say, you know, Dustin or Justin or whatever his name is.
You know, I did call shenanigans on episode 1, and I even sent my message to my friend when I was watching it. There's one scene in season 1 with the kids when they're down in the basement and they're playing D&D. Okay.
Yeah.
When the Demogorgon or whatever it is that pops up, nobody rolled initiative.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like shenanigans. So from that point, at that point when that happened, I was ready to hate the whole show.
But totally unrealistic.
But then I went, wait a minute, they're kids and they're gonna screw up and not even think about that at the time. So I forgave them for it. So
there were plenty of times that I believe we bent the rules a little bit.
A few.
We played
a couple.
Yeah, yeah. I thought, you know, I keep calling, what's his name, Dustin. I keep calling him Jorge. Did you ever see, your kids ever watch Bunked, which was the spinoff of Jesse?
Probably. I never did. Saw it, though.
There's a little curly-haired Hispanic kid in there named Jorge.
Mm-hmm.
Reminds me, I can't figure out, is Dustin, is he Hispanic? Or is he just have that look?
That look, because I'm pretty sure his mom was, because his mom appears in season 2. And
oh, yeah.
She appears to be Anglo, so.
So there's that other, okay, so just to bookend it a little bit. So that was season 1, episode 1 for you. Season 2, episode 9, when Nancy tells Dustin, like Dustin's trying to get a girl to dance with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just isn't working out for him. So Nancy, the hottest girl in the school, like dances with him. Okay. Strike 1, would never happen. All right. Although maybe it would have happened if when we were that age, you know, we and whoever the hottest chick in high school was, like, fought deadly, like, supernatural monsters.
You know, when you fight deadly supernatural monsters, that kind of affects your day. So.
True. Okay, so I'll give him a pass on that one. But when she says to him, well, you know, girls are weird at this age, but that'll change. Like, bullshit, that'll change. That never, that does not change.
Yeah.
Girls are weird all the way through high school. Now, the only caveat I'll say is I did not have Jorge's confidence. Jorge did the hair. He did the, he went up and asked everybody. I didn't have that kind of confidence. I asked maybe once, and but I never went to a dance in junior high. But if I had, I would have asked one time, would have got shot down, and I would have been done with that. I've been like, well, that's that.
You'd have been showing up at my house. Let's play some D&D.
Yeah, we'll play D&D. You're like, then you'd be like, well, that's why I never go to those.
That's right. Dances. Roll initiative.
Yeah. So, yeah, roll initiative. Oh, man, what do you say we sort of wrap it up and move on from there?
That's what they said about me in prison.
Yeah. So, yeah, hey, listeners, let us know what your favorite character is. And what we'll do is we'll get back to T&D next time around.
Yeah.
And then at some future, you know, you, this gives you extra time to check out season 2. Because we're going to talk about season 2, and you're going to be mad if we give away spoilers.
Right.
I'm to the point because I didn't watch season 1 until recently. Like, I have them confused. I can't even remember how season 1 ended. I'm just like, oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah. Now I remember. But, yeah. Okay. Now I remember. But anyway, we just rolled right in like we, you know, last episode of season 1. Okay, let's check out season 2, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah, you would have.
So kind of ran together.
Oh, know? Man, it was a long year for me and Arlo.
We need to find out what happened. Well, I don't know how. See, this is the weird thing when they do. So, okay, we got to go check out Beyond Stranger Things because apparently there's that talk show that we weren't supposed to watch until after we got done.
Yes.
The season 2. So we go check that out. There's probably a lot of insight information. Maybe we'll get to see these famous Duffer brothers who we were supposed to already know about. Whatever. Be like if we formed a...
Yeah, exactly. We should just call ourselves the Something Brothers and instantly we'd have, yeah, we'd be on Netflix.
We'd be cool.
That's right.
Suddenly, right? So anyway, we'll pick up season 2. Next time, do some T&D. In the meantime, go check out the new Aleph, worldsofmaybar.com. A. William Wright on all the things. I'm trying to think, is there anything else we need to cover before we sign off?
No, I think you got it, man.
In that case, for A. William Wright, for Paul Schultz, and for the Duffer Brothers, I'm Steve Benson. This has been the Don't Panic Radio Show, and nothing you just heard. What's true? See the danger.
mountain, by the rivers, through the streets, every corner, abandoned too soon, set down with due care. Don't walk away inside.
Shit.